Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, May 29th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, I'm going to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Pixar's Up by sharing an interview with composer Michael Giacchino. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com. And yes, it's just me on today's episode. I want to talk a little bit about Pixar's Up for a few minutes, and then we're going to share this big interview that I did with Giacchino, which was awesome. I was so thrilled to talk to him about this movie. So I saw Pixar's Up in theaters back in 2009, and I specifically remember having to remove my 3D glasses to wipe away tears after that legendary first 10 minutes. I was so emotional. I mean, everyone around me was crying. It was great. But I only saw the movie that one time, and since then, my opinion of it has always been, well, those first 10 minutes are great, but the rest of it was only okay. I remember thinking that the movie gets a little too silly for its own good near the end. I remember there being like dogs piloting individual aircraft flying around. But having rewatched it to prepare for the interview that I'm going to share today, I discovered that I now actually love this movie. The dogs flying the planes thing still doesn't work for me, but that part of the movie is significantly shorter than it was in my memory. And other than that one little misstep, I have zero complaints about this film. I really loved it. This specific type of discovery doesn't really happen very often for me anymore, because with the combination of watching stuff for work and trying to spend my free time as wisely as I can, I actually don't make a habit of rewatching things that I thought were only okay to begin with. But what a pleasant surprise it was to fire this up and really fall in love with it in a way that I did not the first time around. I've liked a handful of recent Pixar movies, Turning Red, Toy Story 4, but the last one I think I really loved was Coco back in 2017, and watching Up reminded me of that period where it felt like Pixar could absolutely do no wrong, and the studio had famously managed to hone its storytelling in such a way that practically every movie it produced for a while there felt like it was the perfect version of that thing, as if all of the imperfections had been blasted off in grueling story meetings. And rewatching it, I was dazzled all over again by the gorgeous visuals, the way the light travels through the balloons as Carl's house rises up out of the city is just astonishing. And I fell hard for the character designs, which are so wonderful, the beautiful production design, and the fantastic script by director Pete Docter, Tom McCarthy, and co-director Bob Peterson. And then, of course, there's the music. Michael Giacchino's score earned him a well-deserved Oscar, beating Hans Zimmer for Sherlock Holmes, Alexander Desplat for Fantastic Mr. Fox, Marco Beltrami and Buck Sanders for The Hurt Locker, and James Horner for Avatar. And Giacchino is one of the best composers alive right now, so it was really an honor for me to catch up with him and hear his reflections about his time working on Up. So here is my conversation with Michael Giacchino. It's 2009, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek movie comes out the same month as Up, and then you also did the score for Land of the Lost at that same time, and you're still hard at work scoring Lost.
Yes.
What do you remember about that period?
It was a blur. I have a photo of me standing in a movie theater, and on every side of me is a different theater that has one of the movies in it. So it had Land of the Lost, and you know, Up and Star Trek all in the same spot. And I remember like sitting in that moment, feeling how hard that year had been, because there was so much going on, and I was working, and these were all people that I was very close with too, in terms of, you know, having worked on projects before together and knowing them for a long time. So it's a big blur, honestly. You know, when I think back on it, it's just a big blur. It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how to speak about music with all of the proper technical descriptions, so please forgive me. But to an outsider's ear, there is a jauntiness to your theme for Up, maybe almost like a waltz-like quality or something to it. Do you remember what your inspirations were for that theme?
You know, it was the conversations that Pete Docter and I had were always about creating something that felt like it could come from, like if you went into your grandmother's room and you went through her drawers and you pulled out a little music box and opened it up, what would be on that music box? You know, what tune, what kind of melody would play from that? And in that, and thinking of it in those terms, it was something that was going to feel nostalgic. It was something, you know, we knew a waltz would probably be great because that would remind us of, you know, maybe when they got married, or maybe, you know, times in their life they learned how to dance together. There's something about a waltz that helps you tell a beautiful story. You know, that three four time is really great for that. But most of it came out of those kinds of conversations, and it was really just this idea of the music box. What's it sound like if I pulled it out of grandma's, you know, drawer? What's playing on it? And that's sort of what drove the whole thing. There was an early version of the theme I had written, which I knew wasn't quite right. It wasn't 100% there, but I played it for Pete anyway, just to see what if he felt the same. He loved aspects of it, but also felt similarly to that, you know, to the way I did about it. I said, I just doesn't feel finished yet. And so then I went back and I was thinking of what to do. And I remember being in the shower, and that's when the new melody came up to me. Came into my head, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to write it down. I'm just going to wait. And if I can remember this tomorrow, then maybe that's the one to go with. And so I just let it go. And the next morning I thought about it. I was like, can I remember? I remembered it. And then that was the one I went with. I played that one for Pete, and he was like, that's the one, you know? So it was an interesting, you know, it's always an interesting time when you're finalizing or developing a theme for a film, because it's going to be the thing that holds it all together. So you want it to be as close to right as you can.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. I'm curious about that period, you know, coming up with a theme, like when that melody strikes you, are you ever worried like, oh man, is this an existing melody that I've heard in some other movie or something? Like, what is the process of like checking to make sure that your thing is as original as you hope it is?
You know what? You figure somebody will tell you if it happens. You know, someone's going to open their mouth and say something. It wasn't any, you know, it, as long as I don't know, you know, I'm not connected it to anything. I have a pretty good brain for that stuff, and I grew up listening to every film score known to man, and so I'm obsessed with it all. But it's all about this idea of art influencing art, you know, in the way that when the way the classical period changed over the years. From more classical music into romantic, they kept borrowing from what came before, right? So art is always inspiring art, whether it's you know, painting or poetry or novels or anything. You're always like inspired by. I'm sure there are things in your life that you grew up loving, and you're like, oh, if I could write something like this, it would feel great. You know, it's always your jumping off point. But for those films, it felt more like, oh my God, I have a lot of work to do. I have to get this done. This has to be right. So it was more me thinking about that, scheduling and all of that, and trying to get the story right so I didn't mess that up. I never really thought of it in those terms. I guess in that way, I'm always thinking like, all right, somebody at Disney will let me know if I did something wrong.
Yeah.
So
Can you talk about repurposing the theme throughout the movie in different contexts? I rewatched it again and it flows in and out in a bunch of different really interesting ways.
yes, it was meant to be a theme that you could break apart into three parts. You would have Ellie's theme, which is, you know, the main theme from Up, and then you will have what's his the kid, what's his name, Russell's
Oh,
theme. You'd
Russell,
have
yep.
Russell's theme that could fit right in there like a puzzle piece alongside of the Ellie theme, and then you have the theme for Kevin the bird as well, which also fits under there. So if you put them all together, they work together, but I can also remove them from each other. So it becomes like these counterpoints to the main theme. So it was fun. I knew I was going to want to lean on that main theme in a lot of different ways, which is why it was important that it did feel right, because it needed to be able to play as an emotional theme, but it also needed to be available to play as a more action theme or as a fun theme or as a sneaky theme or as a, you know, you name it. I needed it to do all those things. I always loved it in films when you'd hear a main theme used in a wrong, you know, not in a wrong way, but a different way. Like in Raiders of the Lost Ark, when Indy's the truck chase, you know, you hear that Indiana Jones theme, but sometimes it's in a minor key and it feels like, oh, he's struggling. You know, other times it's triumphant. Other times it's sort of funny when he takes the Nazi's uniform and knees him in the head and his hat goes flying. And then you just hear the little clarinet doing the Indy theme.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. I love that. So for me, it was about making something that could move the way the story needed it to move and allow me to help tell that emotional through line through it all.
Yeah, that versatility is incredible. I'm sure you've spoken about that early montage in Up a lot over the years, but I was crying my eyes out earlier this week all over again, watching it again. And the combination of like unrealized dreams and time passing is just so incredibly tragic. And of course, I was paying special attention to the music this time around, and I noticed that in those moments of sort of extreme sadness, the score slows down drastically. And I was wondering if you could tell me about your approach to modulating tempo to achieve
tempo, the desired effect. Well, tempo is an incredible storyteller. Depending on how fast you're going, how slow you're going, when you talk to somebody, if they're talking at breakneck speed, that means something is going on, something is urgent. If they're talking in a much slower, it's casual, then everything is calm and cool. Well, music is no different. You know, music is very similar. So if I'm coming at you rapid fire with a bunch of notes, usually it means there's someone running or doing something on screen that is something active is happening. But if you pull it way back and just do the simplest version of it and at a very slow tempo, suddenly the audience is leaning in because they feel like, oh, there's something important here. This is something, you know, and it keeps everyone's quiet. You know, it's a weird thing that happens. And music has this crazy ability to sort of grab you and pull you in and make you pay attention. And I don't always understand how it works. I just know that it works, you know, and it's more of a feeling that I get too from it when I'm writing. I look for those moments where I go, this tempo feels right. Now I feel where I need to be emotionally. And you're always sort of playing the part of the character when you're writing. At least I am. When I'm writing music, I'm always imagining, how would I feel if that were me right now? Mm-hmm. So that's a real guide to how fast and how slow things go. And I feel like the other great thing about that scene is at first glance, it could seem like complete tragedy. But what the lesson is that, wow, all of those things you did in your life while you were sitting here waiting to do the thing you thought you needed to do were also pretty cool and also a major part of that tapestry of life, you know? So it's a scene that you can look at the first time you see it, you feel one thing, but then if you go back and look at it again, you start and you remember the lesson of the film, you think of it in a very different way, and hopefully then look at your own life and go, you know what? I'm not going to just only wait for the thing I think I'm supposed to have. I'm going to also enjoy the second and the moment that I'm in right now in this moment, you know, in this second. So in this bit of life that we're living right now.
100%. That sense of time passing in that montage is so effective. And I was also thinking about how some of your score for Lost is also able to sort of harness the emotion of experiencing years gone by. Like I think specifically about the end of The Constant. And obviously as a composer, you're always thinking about time in relation to individual notes. But I wonder if you have like, if you think about music in relation to time in a story sense and sort of how you approach writing scores that way, do you think about it at all in those terms?
I mean, yes, in the way that I'm always, if it's the story of the passage of time, that is a story. So the music has always got to be hand in hand with the story, right? So I do think about what kind of music or what something that I write that could help the audience just relax and understand that this is a passage of time, as opposed to this is happening, this caused this to happening, this caused this to happening, this caused this. You know, writing the wrong music could get the audience thinking the wrong way. So it is important to write the kind of theme or thematic material that helps the audience understand, oh, I feel you're going to take me through this journey with blurred edges. you know, the blurred edges of time. And so sometimes it's just instinctual, you do it. Other times you go, okay, this is a passage of time montage. I need to do something. Or even something like in Speed Racer, when they're building the car at the end of the film, you know, that's a huge montage. And that is like, boom, boom. And but that one has a tempo that is like, we got to get this done.
Yeah,
we all got to work together and do it, you know. And so it's a very different version of that. But yes, you're absolutely right. You're always thinking about that. That what is the core story element? And passage of time is a story element for sections of movies sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they are their own unique things, you know.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You mentioned the word nostalgia earlier. I'm curious what your relationship to nostalgia is like these days and if it's maybe changed over time at all.
Well, you know, it has changed over time. I mean, you know, everything behind me in that case is all my toys from when I was a kid. And that's a lot of Star Wars toys. That's a lot of Planet of the Apes. It's, you know, Marvel action figures and DC guys. Everything I have worked on, a lot of Star Wars stuff, Star Trek, everything I've worked on, I grew up playing with. Over there. And so when I think about that, I think about, for me, the nostalgia is this incredible creative space that those films allowed me to play in when I was a kid, you know, and I would be outside making up my own adventures or making my own movies about these things growing up. So for me, the nostalgia always goes back to that pure period of a 10 to 12 year old kid when you're just in it because you love it. And it helps anchor me in what I do today, because you can easily get tired. And, you know, this job is hard. It's very hard to do this stuff. And on the giant movies, there's a lot of pressure. But if I just sit here and remember why I'm even sitting here, the things that came out that I love, that sent me in this crazy direction to do what I'm doing, I feel better about it. And then I feel like maybe somebody who's watching this thing I'm working on will feel the same way one day. They'll have that CD, or they'll have that, you know, Werewolf by Night, you know, Funko Pop thing, and go, I loved that as a kid, you know, and they'll remember what it was that brought them joy, and how do I take that and apply it to my life today to create good nostalgia, not just like, things were so much better back then. Like that's what I call the bad nostalgia. The good nostalgia is remembering what you fell in love with and why, and how do you carry that with you today.
Yeah, that's great. This score must occupy a special place for you since you won an Oscar for it. I was wondering if you remembered anything at all about your award season experience and like stepping on stage and giving that speech, or if that entire thing is like a total blur for you.
Well, I'm generally the kind of person in situations like that, I don't think too much about it. Like I'm like, well, it's really beautiful and wonderful that to be nominated, because that just means that people who do what you do liked what you did. So that's cool. Right. So to me, if that's all that happens, that's great. I had no illusions or thoughts that I would even win the thing, but I was having fun at all the lead up into the events. And the reason I was having fun is because I got to hang out with my friends at these things. We were all forced to go to these interviews, to these events and different, you know, it's a crazy, crazy time, the award season. And honestly, it's not my favorite time at all. But when I get to do something like that and be with Pete Docter, Jonas Rivera, other people that I worked with on the film, that's the upside to it. Then we got to have fun doing the thing together that we were sort of, you know, not wanting to do at all. But as long as we were there together. So what I remember a lot about that time is going from place to place, all of us all the time, and talking about the film. But the thing that was fun was just being together, you know. And then I remember sitting in the row with, you know, Hans Zimmer and James Horner, who I loved. You know, Marco Beltrami was sitting behind me as well, and Buck. And it was just to think that I was sitting there with these guys. That was crazy to me, you know. That was insane to me, especially James Horner, you know, who I really grew up listening to everything he ever did, and have such respect for him. I just couldn't believe it. I thought, well, if this is all that it is, this is great. This is all I need, because, you know, I could go home and pull out all my James Horner records and say, yeah, I got to sit at the Academy Awards with James Horner. That's pretty cool. Awesome. Yeah. You know? And then when they said my name, I was like, okay, now what? Because I had not prepared anything. I don't like to prepare, because then you tend to just think about that. And I always feel like, well, something will come out. We'll see what happens. And as I was walking to the stage, I just remembered my parents and how incredibly supportive they were through the whole thing. Like, they never said, you're crazy, you should get a real job or do something that'll, you know, sustain you in life. This is a pipe dream. They never, ever said that. They were always like, okay, you want to make movies? We don't know how to do that, but here's my old movie camera, you know, or let me help you get film for the camera. And every step along the way, they were incredibly helpful. And I had friends in my childhood whose parents weren't that, whose parents were more on the be a lawyer or an accountant or a teacher or something that has a very rigid and dependable paycheck. Yeah. You know, and they, some of them may have missed out on this opportunity to go into a more creative field, because I certainly saw a lot of my friends that would help me make these movies as incredibly creative people, you know? And it's just, you know, so I just felt like, oh, maybe I should say something about that. To any kid who's feeling like pressured to do the thing they don't want to do, don't listen to it. Get out there and do the thing that you want to do. Everything else will fall in place. Just, you know, follow what makes you happy. That's the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. That's one of my favorite speeches. I was wondering if you remember anything else about creating the score for Up, if there was maybe like a moment that sort of you got hung up on that took a little while to, you know, as some sort of obstacle in the road where you're like, ah, man, this scene, I can't really nail this. And then you finally, you know, the dam burst and you finally got it right.
Well, what happens usually, like on the Married Life scene, there were a couple areas that every time we did it, like I'd look at it and go, well, it works, but maybe it'd be better if we try this. Cause you don't really know until you put something up there, until you get there with the orchestra, you hear what it's going to sound like. You do the whole thing. And so there were one or two times where I went back to that to just target a certain area that could be better, you know, and make sure. So it's nice to have those moments to be able to go back. That's why we sort of spread out the scoring schedule, so that, you know, you have time to live with what you did and you can go back and you have a what we call a fixed day to go in and change anything I want to change, you know, do any last minute tweaks. But Married Life had a couple of those because we just wanted it to be perfect, you know, and even in the development of that scene, it took a while for them to really get to this place of, this is what the story is, you know, in the storyboard phase. So for me, it was very similar. There were a few areas where I kept needling at going, oh, maybe this is too fast now. This should be slower here. What happens if we, you know? So yeah, that happens. And, but it's usually targeted to one little area. It's not like a global thing that happens.
Gotcha. So 15 years of Up, what is your relationship like with this movie now? Like, have you gone back and rewatched it, or do you not like to revisit your work, or what do you think about Up these days?
I haven't seen it in a while. Last time I saw it was when it was performed prior to the pandemic in San Francisco. We did a live to picture thing up there with the symphony. I think that was the last time I saw it. And, but I hadn't seen it a long time before then. It's weird because everyone that, you know, everyone I meet will say, I loved Up, or I played Up at my wedding, or, you know, all of these things. And after a while you're like, ah, and it made you feel like, oh wait, is that all I am? That thing that happened 15 years ago? That's it. That's it. That's all I am. And then you had the realization like, no, that's not all you are, but that is something you did that they love. So that's not a bad thing. That's a really nice thing. And that takes me back to that idea of nostalgia, remembering what it was at the time you were doing. And now looking at the thing that went out into the world and really does mean something to people. you know, and that's pretty cool. And it really hit home for me one day when I was at Disneyland and I was going down Main Street and I suddenly just heard the theme from Up playing on Main Street. And I thought, what is happening? This was crazy. Because for me, going to Disneyland always meant I get to hear the Sherman Brothers and things like that, people that, you know, but to hear my own music there was insane. You know, that was an insane moment, especially on Main Street, separated from, say, something like the Incredicoaster, where the music is part of the thing. This was just out in the world playing randomly along with everything else in the Disney thing. And that was kind of cool. I thought that was really special. So that really that helped me focus on why it's a really positive thing. And it was really fun. So I do now have really good thoughts and memories about the whole experience. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Any other things about Up that you wanted to mention or reflections that you've had over the years or interactions or like, have you talked with Pete Docter about it at all or any of your...
I just spent 4 days with him this weekend. Yeah, no, we're all, you know, we've all remained incredibly close friends. Like we, and our kids since Up have, our kids met on Up and they are now still best friends with each other. My daughter and his daughter lived together in New York for a period of time. It's really fun to see what that movie brought us in terms of just family and friendship. So for me, that's the best part about the whole thing.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for your work on Up and Lost and so many other things. I mean, you're like one of my favorites in the business. So
That's so nice to hear. Thank you. Great to talk to you.
All right, I hope you all enjoyed that. I'm gonna read a few more of these 5-star reviews that you guys have been leaving, which I really appreciate. Chris Pauly says, I've listened since the beginning and always love hearing from the different writers and editors at Slash Film, quite a few different points of view and areas of expertise, great mix of news, deep dives, interviews, and in-depth discussions of mostly modern film. I'm probably going to butcher this name. I apologize. Shinjukuku says, I live in Japan and hit the daily first thing every morning. I've been listening for years, and I'm so pleased that Ben has kept the show going. Film and television, books, even food. Lots of solid recommendations here. I especially like Ben's comments on older films as he fills in his cinema education. Well, thank you for that. I hope to be bringing some more old movie reviews to this podcast shortly. Andrew from Wichita says, everyone here is amazing. They have such great chemistry. Ben, Brad, Chris, and Jacob have led the way as the old guard, while new voices like Ryan and BJ add fresh perspectives. For my money, this is absolutely the best podcast for news, reviews, and just everything involving TV and movies, hands down. Thank you so much for that. Slick Rick Dude says, I give you 5 stars, but no offense, BJ gets a little too political sometimes and is very judgmental of others that don't share her worldview. Well, I appreciate the review, Slick Rick Dude. I did say that if you leave a 5-star review, I will read it on the site. So, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that, but, you know, everybody has their own opinion, I suppose. I think that's going to do it. We have a few more of these reviews that I've banked that I'll read on a future episode. But thank you all so much again for leaving those 5-star reviews. That really does help basically bump us up on the algorithm and get us in front of potential listeners that have never heard the show before. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about Up at slashfilm.com. There are a lot of stories back in our archives from around the time the movie came out and some more recent stuff as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.